which is when we come into that, they will indicate. I'm just raising that so that when they come to that slide, you don't take an aback about what they are reporting, which is not in the pack. Secondly, that day I hear KZN, the Department of Health, we will also, they have also indicated that they would also like to take us through on the challenge that they are faced with in the province. They will when they are done, they will then go into that. So I don't think honourable members will then take an offence on that. They are here, we then have to utilise them. You are, if my memory serves me well, you are the last province in terms of the status of mental health in the institution, except for Gauteng, because Gauteng, it's what transpired in Gauteng, but it's no more a Gauteng matter now. It's more of a national matter. The stance that we have taken and the approach of the committee is that please be open and honest to us with the challenges that you have faced, the contributory factors. We will come in if we think that the presentation is a little bit silent on issues, and so that we're not only going to end MEC on presentations. We are going to go and conduct oversight, but we want to go there having so that we're able to hold you accountable, said, but in your presentation, this is what you reflected, and this is what we are experiencing on the ground. So, I think that's where we are. We're not going to go back. You know why we are here, what happened in this area. Mental health in the country. And in fact, I'm one of the people that were holding a view that we are weak as a country, but I've picked up during my sick leave that in fact it's a global challenge. Mental health is a global challenge, particularly in two sectors, the youth and the aged. But just generally, nobody can be confident that he or she won't suffer of any mental disorder at a particular time. So, having said that, we were here when we were introducing ourselves. We're not going to go back there. I'm handing over to you, MEC. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson, and to the Honourable Members. Our brief was to come and actually present to the Portfolio Committee the status of mental health services in KwaZulu-Natal. The slide that is using, Honourable Chairperson, is that it would not be okay to come to Cape Town and not say anything to the Portfolio Committee members about the status of the oncology services in the province, which actually has made the whole country to be anxious to check and see what is happening and where are the intervention plans. The person next to me was introduced as Dr. Kanyile, is the CEO of Inkosi Albert Luthuli, which is a central hospital that is actually managing that part, but she's also today representing the HOD. She's an acting DDG on clinical support and specialized services, but we have already employed someone, Honourable Chair. The person will be starting next month, so that part is covered. So, therefore, Honourable Chair, like I would imagine all my colleagues have presented are saying we are guided by the Mental Health Act, that actually of 2002, that tells us what to do, that provides us to really look after the South Africans for care, treatment and rehabilitation of all the persons who have got mental illnesses. So that act also covers quite well out of the procedures of admissions, the rights of those clients and in the mental health care users, establishment of the boards, mental health boards, and what they do, how they support us, and the administration of property of mental ill persons. So the objective, however, is focusing on regulating an integrated, efficient and equitable access in the best interest of all the users at all levels and all facilities. That is embedded on Chapter 10, Section 66. That actually talks about, therefore, among other things, how do we license, how do we then establish even this, the support and the contribution that comes from the NGOs that work with us in these in these processes. The service platform, however, is that a person will then be cared for at the very start, even at the community level. So we would find what we therefore say primary, secondary, and tertiary services will then, where a person could even walk into an NGO or go into our clinics in Bioness and or go into our community health care center, where there could also be over and above a nurse, be an officer, the medical officer, and probably some would have a psychologist. And then if things become complicated or needs further referral, goes to the district hospital, and therefore there could be a multidisciplinary team there that would then take care of, including maybe a presence of psychiatrists. If needs be, we also do have our regional hospitals that are providing that type of a service. And then later on, then there will be a specialized hospital dedicated to look after. So that referral pattern is actually established, and we coordinate all that. Just to indicate, those that I call specialized mental health services, mental hospitals in the province, they are located in those various districts. Mkungu Ndlovu has got a hospital called Town Hill, Fort Napier, and Mgeni is all at Mkungu Ndlovu. At Ethekwini, we have psychiatric care in King Dinizulu. It used to be called King George, now it's King Dinizulu, and the Klengen Hospital. Amajuba District has got a component there, Matateni Hospital, Heri Kwala, there is a Mzimkulu Hospital. In these following regional hospitals, they are not fully fledged specialized psychiatric hospitals, but they will have beds, they will have a multidisciplinary team that will take care of and look after mental ill patients. Together, Lady Smith provides that Ugu Port Shepstone will do. King Cetshwayo used to be called the Utungulu in and around Richards Bay, now called King Cetshwayo as a district. We have Ngwelezane beds there. At Ilembe District, Stenga Hospital provides Mkungulo 18 days over and above those that are dedicated to be providing that service. At Thekwini, the all other hospitals that are measured there, Addington, King Edward, Mahatma Gandhi, Prince Mshien, and RK Khan, will also have psychiatric beds. So then according to our STP District Hospital plan, to cater for 50% of the total number of health beds reserved for mental health care users, there is a 72-hour process, which maybe we won't go into that, the policy, as we say, they must stay within 72 hours there and be assessed. If they need them to stay in there, in the psychiatric hospital, then they will be referred higher up. The admissions will obviously be those that come in acute, either a patient is voluntarily coming in himself or herself or brought by as an emergency or by relatives assisted, and sometimes involuntarily pushed and getting there because the person is already needing that type of a support. Forensic observation and criminal capacity assessment. The others will obviously be where we are largely in the specialized services, specialized psychiatric, having forensic state patients and mentally ill prisoners that are resident there, and sometimes in chronic ones for rehabilitation. The step-down halfway homes are those patients who have been looked after in certain of our facilities and now are getting better, and maybe we'll have to get into a particular step-down facility, just like Minister was explaining that Charlotte Maxeke, then you go to Hillbro for patients who were just delivered but don't need their care. So you will not keep patients at Fort Napier and the Town Hill for long if they are recovering. If they are improving, then you'll send them to a step-down type of facility that might sometimes include NGO facilities that we fund. Now I think Dr. Kanyile will then take it here. I'll come in and close and add on the other processes.
Thank you, MEC. The role of the NGOs, as we all know, honourable members, that the NGOs play a very important role in the management of mental health care users.
They are part of a mental health services at community level, and they also act as advocates for mental health care users and advocate for the users, the services and the users themselves. They provide support to the mental health care users and their families and provide stimulation, care and rehabilitation services for the mental health care users. As MEC has explained the function of the step-down care and halfway homes, and they also act as a referral gateway into the health and discharge between hospital and the families, SAPS, the Department of Social Development, and families of the mental health care users. The following are the documents that we use in the province that assist us in managing the NGOs. The first one is the policy that was developed and approved in 2012 that helps us with the management of the grant-funded institutions. We also have applications that we have for grant funding to all the health institutions that has been formalized. We are also having draft guidelines for licensing of the community mental health NGOs in the province that were developed in 2013. But we are now are informed that the national policy has now been released and is in discussion. So we are waiting for that policy to be finalized so that we can also align ours to the National Department of Health policy. We also have inspection tools that we use when we visit these facilities to check for compliance, and we have a stringent criteria that we also have that is available, and a draft package of services for community-based psychosocial rehabilitation. And the National Department of Health deinstitutionalization document that we also use. This slide just gives you the list of NGOs that have been licensed in the province. It's a total of about 25, with the indication of the number of beds that have been indicated next to their names. I will not go through it. And in this slide, we have just mentioned the rate per day per category of a facility, because the facilities have different categories, and in the department in the province we are using 65 rands for the residential care facilities per day, and the residential care facility for profound disabilities is 78 rands with an annual increase of 3%, and the day treatment facilities is 35 rands with the maximum with an annual 3% increase, and psychosocial clubs it's 20 rands per day with annual 3% increase. The criteria, the following are the criteria that we look at when we assess the facilities. It's the physical structure, especially with regards to safety and accessibility, the availability of floor space, the ventilation of the rooms, the care processes. We assess whether when they admit you, they are not discriminatory, but it's because of the need for you to be admitted. We also check things like they have the right processes of referral to the nearest primary healthcare facility should that be required, and how they manage and follow the patient up while they are in the facilities. The medication part, we also assess the administration of medication, the storage of medication, and whether that all complies. We look at the therapeutic programs, your stimulation and rehabilitation programs, if while the mental health care users are admitted in the facility, they are exposed to the programs that they should be exposed to. With regards to administration, we look at the records of the the routine and the regular assessments, the physical and mental assessments, the periodic assessments, and also whether discharges and deaths are recorded accordingly and communicated to the provincial office, because that is also important. We look at the skill mix of the staff that is used at the facility, and whether they are trained to assist with rehabilitation and stimulation. for monitoring and evaluation. There are regular checks which are quarterly, which are conducted by the district mental health coordinators, and the province has an annual visit that they do that is also it is done together with the relicensing, because we do the new renewal of licenses every year. I will hand over to the MEC.
Honourable Chairperson, we actually are of the strong view that you are interested to know in the whole country with regards to our processes as to how are we dealing with mental health status in the country. So when the minister actually noticed this process, I took it upon myself to say we'll dispatch two teams. The initial one was myself as an MEC going to those already established facilities that are specialized in our province and go and do an in-local inspection so that we could actually report to the minister. And the other team was led by the HOD to visit those NGOs whose information that Dr. Kindly has just given, that we are very stringent in terms of which NGO to get what. So the SDMANI report highlighted the following, and therefore those that I ticked is because then we actually have been founding that on infrastructure, the only thing that we might actually say we may be found wanting there, when are we going to repaint that one? But there's a particular way you need to build a psychiatric ward for psychiatric patients. Very high roofs, high ceiling, so that they cannot even get there. The beds must be so low that they can. So I went around the province inspecting the suitability of the facilities and the space and accommodation, and including where they actually sit and enjoy their life. You can't have, you have to have very hard, solid tables, so that it's not even table that they can lift up or hit another fellow patient. The access and assisted device. So in terms of governance and management, we went through that none of those that are in the province have not been licensed, and the project management thereof, and the managerial leadership of those, because that is part of giving them a status to actually begin to do that. The funding, here and there, they were reporting some of them being delayed in terms of being funded, but there are some of those that come tonight and start getting up and go and get patients there, and we have been very fortunate working with the Department of Social Development to identify those that are just becoming enthusiastic but do not have funding and therefore do not have a space to actually deal with that part. Like Dr. Kanye has indicated, we follow closely those that are having called patients, that we even have stepped down patients there to make sure that we are monitoring them and continuously evaluate them. Every quarter, every district will have to go and see those that are actually within them and do follow up in that regard. The issues also where it was raised, the competency capacity, and that is not going to be an issue because we therefore would find that we are monitoring them very closely, how they are staffed, the type of qualification, is the people who have got skills, proper skills to look after our patients, because it's no use looking after the patients in a specialized psychiatric hospital, and before they get home, you then down refer to a facility that is either going to make them worse or not get them to recover. So that part becomes our responsibility right until they go to the community. And you actually, that issue of communication and referrals, patients are actually, we are getting family members. In fact, there are some of the members, if there are MPLs who've got even some of their relatives who are in our facilities, how they regularly get information from us, what is happening to their members, and they also, but they also must assist us as members to visit, because we can do so much to report. When family members don't report, it becomes an issue. So all those issues, referral pathways that must be consistent with the patient, is when the patient moves from facility one to facility two, you can actually have a paper trail and trace where they are. And the right mix for right facility, that to us. Also, we have ticked all those because we had to go and inspect and make sure that it is up and running. We also are therefore saying the strength within the KZN model is that the annual licensing and inspection of all NGOs undertaken by the licensee, who is actually here, CSD, they actually say that facility can actually hold that. So we work very close with them. Annually, they must actually get their license renewed. Provincial visits and monitoring conducted annually, while we are doing ours quarterly per district. The grant funding committee to adjudicate applications is functional, so that whoever is, before you can actually get more grant funding this month, this year we need to go and check and make sure that the facilities as it is was last year, and therefore is still to qualify. Our district therefore will give those reports and monitor those NGOs quarterly. The NGO payment is linked to the finance and budget office of the district, so they get to be paid. Sometimes we may delay, but we want to pay them quickly and on time based on the reports. So there's an onus upon those districts, NGOs, to even submit reports that will make us, therefore, to pay them. Therefore, action is being taken on poor performing NGOs. Somehow, some of them have been closed. So it is not just closing today. A consultation takes place. Get them to check up whatever they are doing. If none of those things are coming up, then the decision is taken that they shall be closed, because we actually are trying to save government the embarrassment of actually supporting and giving people that can perform. Provincial license given to NGOs that require further compliance in certain areas. And the licensing and inspections integrated with district office, disability and mental health directors at head office. So, Honourable Chairperson, there is a continuous support and to and fro of information from the districts, from the NGOs into the head office. However, we do notice the gaps. We cannot actually say with the all 11 districts, all of them religiously, quarterly, they conduct those monitoring. So this has actually given us a space to actually enforce, to say, if you have done it on this first quarter, there should not be a space, because we need to see records of when you did the second and third and the fourth quarter. There is also a need to increase the capacity at district coordinators level so that this function is not left unattended. Honourable Chairperson, we agree with you. In the whole world, the mental health services are just not being taken care of, probably because of other pressures that come in. So we also notice that we may not come and confirm that we are strong on that part. We actually do notice certain challenges that needs to be taken care of. We need to also to strengthen the process of budget linked to the performance and strengthen information sharing between social development and ourselves, because they are the ones who actually pioneer the licensing, and we rely on them. So that part, we actually say it has to be a reason for strengthening. I might as well say this is the information that must be strong, but the MEC Health, MEC DSD in the province have actually said we will not leave any stone unturned. This must be our main focus, not only just because it happened in Gauteng, but because it can actually be one of those services that can just fall into the crack and nobody picks it up again. We need to develop a tool for tracking any new unlicensed NGOs which are mushrooming due to financial incentives. We cannot come to the portfolio committee and say it never happens. Right now, today, there may be someone who's starting something there, get a little bit of money, get a bit of funding, not yet being licensed, and therefore start the process. So we actually say the issue of a license is because we have already identified certain criteria that we have fulfilled. So we shall not allow before you get a license. And therefore, DSD is actually very strong in doing that. Increased monitoring and tracking of mortality rates within the NGOs. The clarity on what our subsidy funds and what it does is an issue, because the NGOs will say we're not funding them enough, but we actually indicate how much and what are we. The compensation of employees, some of NGOs have raised concerns that we currently just fund per patient day rate, irrespective of cost of to the NGOs that they need to run. So that's an issue that is always debatable. There's no NGO that you can give this type of funding and support and say it's enough, it covers all of us. So it's always an issue that needs to be a to and fro. We do actually notice that we would want to have enough psychiatrists and psychologists in the public service, and it might actually talk to the next one to say some of the people will come and train and get support from our public, but there's not a single specialist in the world who has never been trained in a public hospital. But it depends on the people's wishes whether they would want to support that very struggling public service into an optimal one, or they leave. So some of them would therefore have a desire to qualify and leave. Infrastructure, I might indicate, Honourable Chairperson, all the facilities that I inspected, all of them are doing well except for Matadeni and Umzimkulu hospitals. Those ones, we really need to go in there. It's quite old. They need to be revamped. So we also have to look into the budget and see, not to demolish completely, but just to improve, revitalize the buildings. Of course, psychiatric care will always be, somebody will always say, limited budget, but I think prioritization sometimes will be important just to go and inject and make sure that the services does not really crumble to completion. The lack of community-based services, halfway houses, is another issue, because the more we have this, the more then we can decant patients from chronic and other acute services, and maybe having more halfway houses. Of course, it will come with a challenge, but the more we have of those, the more also they will need funding. But it's something that we continuously want to improve. The increase in the substance abuse leading and exacerbating mental illnesses, it is not something to hide that some of the things that impact on mental health illnesses is related to the substance abuse. So that is a societal issue that all of us need to work on. We are just raising those, Honourable Chairperson, to say it's actually answering some of the issues that we have already done, and I really don't want to waste time to say we are very strong on that with the DSD, social development, and we work with the universities to increase, among other things, to say some of the registrars must come in and actually take this qualification, because we need them. Also, it's within our within limited budget also to then improve the infrastructure here and there, and to increase the awareness and educate our communities on early detection, treatment, and modalities of referral pathways, and to build capacity and support these NGOs, because really they are very enabling facilities whenever we are full in our... We would need them at any given time to actually decant to them as a step down care, and because they also play a very critical role in supporting our mental health care users. To encourage, however, active participation of members, family members, to do visit, show up, come up, because that on its own is a therapy for family members to see their relatives coming into the service, to the centers, and speak to them, update them about what families are doing. They just, some of them improve and actually long to go home. So this is something that we really need to actually educate our society about it. And therefore, that one, revising and updating our draft mental health strategy and costing, to lobby for more budget to support mental health services, whether it will be possible is another issue. Honourable Chairperson, I therefore took it to say we are in Cape Town, invited by the Portfolio Committee to present mental health illness. It would be proper to not to leave this matter not being raised with the Portfolio Committee. Where are we in terms of oncology services? Oncologists is a group of doctors who are specialists, to treat cancer, but very complicated cancer. The normal process of cancer is just getting a lump here. Any doctor, myself included, can also be able to treat and take that lump away. But when it comes to the need of an oncologist, it's when issues have complicated well. We want to say as a province, we took it upon ourselves, knowing and informed by science, that what is the commonest cancer in the world is called the cancer of the cervix. It used to be called a postmenopausal bleed. It's a cancer that would affect a woman when she had stopped having menses, when the menses stopped between 40 and 45. Suddenly, at the age of 60, she starts getting menses again, and hence its name was called a postmenopausal bleed. The cause of the postmenopausal bleed is nothing else but cancer of the cervix. We have since been noticing that women are getting cancers much earlier, as early as 35, and therefore we launched a campaign in the province which was called Pilama, wanting to say even if a woman comes to our facility with a toothache, you must encourage her to do a pap smear, because you want to actually make sure you identify them early enough. Was early identification and early treatment will give you a cure success. We do not regret having done that, but however, we have increased the demand for this service, and therefore have to deal with the demand, which is good enough because they are able to see patients. Now, Ellie, we would not be able to say what came when, because right now what has hit us is that patients would even start from as far as Mkanyagude, Mangus, and if they become complicated, must now go to a center, which got a multidisciplinary team of doctors, including an oncologist, who must advise how to actually do the treatment. What then has been the issue is that the two remaining oncologists who were at Inkosi Albert Luthuli, where Dr. Kanyile, the CEO, left. And therefore, leaving a system in and around Durban without an oncology. Now, what you have there are currently doctors who are just senior enough but do not have a title of being oncologists. There's a team there because part of it is a multidisciplinary team needing nurses, radiotherapists, radiologists to work there. What then we have done as a province on this stopgap measure, when we are actually going to have a long-term plan, is to then take our resident oncologist who are at Grace Hospital to then have sessions to go and work at Inkosi Albert Luthuli Hospital on certain days. And then we also have this, because there are already doctors who need the supervision. We would need this doctor to come from Grace Hospital, head of department, Dr. Elwa. The team of Grace Hospital will also continue to support on specific days, come to Inkosi Albert Luthuli and therefore support the hospital. We have four oncologists who are from a private sector called Rainbow Oncologists. They will be offering services, I think Tuesdays and Thursdays, I think, Inkosi Albert Luthuli, supporting the hospital to be continuously running too. We have 25 oncologists who are not going to be resident in our hospital, but they are on private practice. Because when we are short of oncologists in and around Durban, there are 52 oncologists on a private practice. 52 of them are on private practice, and now on the public we are short of all of them. So there are 25 private oncologists who have agreed to provide what we call an offline planning. And offline planning is where we would actually send reports through emails and through pictures to a radiologist, an oncologist sitting at Entabene Hospital or anywhere and say, this is our plan. We need you as an oncologist to advise us which way of the two, and they will then respond. And the team that is sitting at Inkosi Albert Luthuli, which some of them are senior enough but short of being oncologists, will then act on the basis of the advice that has been given by the private oncologist. We are awaiting a work clearance of a foreign oncologist who has applied, and we have given the person a job pending a clearance, a security clearance from our other departments in the country that will clear foreigners to come in. But we are mindful that a permanent solution is to get full-time oncologists, I think was Albert Luthuli, which we are working very hard on to get some of them that are actually going to be training. And I was just speaking, and this afternoon also be speaking to the Minister of Health, whether we will not be able to get some of the borrowed, stolen oncologists to come to actually assist the province. Because we quite see a lot, like Minister was presenting this morning, already in hospitals like Manguzi, Bethesda, which are bordering Mozambique, not only do we see patients there who are coming in to deliver and go back to Mozambique, we are also, as Inkosi Albert Luthuli, training from Swaziland, Mozambique, and the Honorable Chairperson knows that that service also trains from the Eastern Cape. So the Inkosi Albert Luthuli will always have a big number of patients who are coming in for cancer treatment, and they will be training on a large scale, and therefore we would say our permanent solution is to get full-time oncologists quickly, and we are working very hard on that. Minister supporting us. We will not be able to indicate timelines when the situation will actually be like that. But that is what we want to present, Honourable Chairperson. It's not a story that indicates that we are out of the challenges yet, but we are focusing on this matter quickly. And part of it is a meeting that I have with the Minister this afternoon. Thank you very much, Honourable Chairman.
Thank you, Honourable Members. There is the presentation from KZN. Any questions, Honourable Mabanga, Honourable James, Honourable Ndaba, and it will be Honourable myself, the last one.
Thank you, Chairperson. Greetings to the MEC and its department. Chair, firstly, let me welcome the presentation and also to indicate that I'm tempted to agree with it And I want to believe that it is the true reflection of what is happening in KZN with regard to mental health services. However, Chair, I have the clarity-seeking questions on the following slides. Where is that slide? On slide 12, where it relates to issues raised from SED many ombuds reports. Chair, addressing surrounding infrastructure, governance and management, funding and data management. Has anything been done to ensure that NGOs operate at their fullest potential? If not, are there any measures in place to help mitigate? Chair, migrating on slide 14, with regard to strengths within the current KZN model. Are the NGO's quarterly inspections sufficient? And as far as they are concerned, when and how often do they submit their reports? Is the department able to respond on time on arising issues? The reason for this question, Chair, is because of the amount of issues from the SED many ombuds report. It looks like as if there is poor liaison between the NGOs and the department. Moving on, slide 17, where it relates to the remedial action to date. The remedial action are quite on point. My question will be, to what capacity have you implemented these, and how is the response? I therefore submit, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chair, I think my first question is with regards to the oncologists. I want to ask the MEC whether, what would be the cost of oncologists to prefer private sector than public sector? Is it because of maybe the package that is given to them, or there are any other reason? If there are any other reason in terms of service that is delivered by public sector, that makes them not to be satisfactory, maybe. Basically, that is my question. And Chair, maybe there is a need. Whether do you think there is a need for us as the governing party to take this matter to policy conference in terms of reviewing the packages of public servants? Thank you very much, Chair. No. That is the first one. But I think the second one is with regards to, is there any mental health awareness program that is implemented in order to dispel the stigma attached to mental health in KZN? Thank you very much.
Honorable James.
Thank you, Chair. Firstly, let me welcome the presentation. But it is a bit dry, Chairperson. I feel not enough information has been given to the Portfolio Committee in terms of understanding the rate of how many beds you have for psychiatric patients per hospital or per facility. We have no idea. We have no idea the percentage of we do not know how the percentage of psychiatric patients per sub-district or per district and their sub-district. So I really understand with all the facilities that you have here, that you've shown here, that you've given us here, how much access do they have? That is the first one. The second one, I would like to understand, is there a budget specifically allocated for mental health? We'd like to know how is that breakdown done in specifically how much real proportion that goes directly for primary health care, for mental health care. Also, I think we welcome having community healthcare workers working in provincial mental care facilities and NGOs, but how do you capacitate the NGOs, the continuous capacitation of the NGOs on mental health so that, they comply with the National Mental Health Policy Framework started in strategic plan 2013-2020. How does that happen? And one of the biggest problems that we have is the shortage of staff. How many vacant posts do you have? So as to ensure that access and quality treatment of psychiatric patients does happen in the province. I also want to know how many daycare or outpatient facilities do you have that treats the different kinds of different kinds of psychiatric illnesses, including alcohol abuse, drug abuse. How do you manage that in the province? Do you have outpatients where they can go on a daily basis and come back home and be treated? Do you have rehab centers where we also would like to know about that too. I think it's very dry. But having said that, I also want to touch on what my colleague has touched on the oncology side. What are the issues that continue to drive the oncologists away from our public health? Is it the working conditions? Is it the non-maintenance of the equipment that they have to use or making it difficult for them to do their work properly? Is it the salary? What are the issues? Because we have to find a way to retain them. We cannot continue to have the critical, much needed in the public health professionals complaining, because we see it on media, they were on TV complaining, and that doesn't sit well sitting in this portfolio and thinking that, knowing that how this service is needed by the poor, because it really services the poor of the poorest. The public health is for the poor of the poorest, because they go there with nothing. And somehow it needs to be beefed up with the adequate staff. That if they continue to live with the allegations that we've read, even yesterday I was talking about the allegations that the non-maintenance of the equipment and everything else. I don't want to go into it because you know better than I do. How is that going to be addressed because I cannot say it doesn't happen. In my language, it's Xhosa, there is a problem. We cannot run away from it. We cannot, I don't hear something, there's nothing of that nature. How is this going to be addressed? Thank you, Chairperson.
Honourable Mason.
Thank you, Chair. We think that the Mental Care Act of 2002 need to be amended in order to regulate the relationship between the department and the NGOs, as well as the Department of Social Development. Especially Section 10, Chapter 10, Section 6, bracket 0, which allows for the authorization, licensing of health establishments, non-governmental organizations, or private bodies providing mental health care. Because there will always be a need to find somebody, especially if there is financial incentives, to try and get a license somehow, somewhere, or even operate without a license. But because he's solving a need for maybe for the department, you have a blind eye or whatever, you don't scrutinize what is happening until something like estimating disaster happens. And some years back, there was a lot of home caregivers during the HIV/AIDS pandemic, and those people were okay, they were very useful, they were volunteering and doing things. Now they become redundant, let's be blunt. You don't need them anymore, we have to change them and convert them into something else, which is current. But they don't know anything except what they used to do, and they want to be paid because they were useful, and say, now we were useful, now you make us redundant because you found some other better people, and so then these contradictions develop. And we have learned from estimating problem that this type of thing can become a problematic thing if it's not regulated beforehand. For instance, I was going to ask who is issuing out the licenses to the NGOs, and what are the circumstances, and how many are you allowed to, or you just anybody coming to apply. I've seen you've got lots and lots of NGOs in KZN and so on and so on. Fine, that's why, as long as they are regulated and they are trained and they are professional, and they do what they're supposed to do. But people do not come to apply with a track record. You develop, you do something and a track record and have a track record. You can't come with a huge track record and say you're going to apply. Where did you get it from? So these are some of the problematics. And of course, healthcare is a competence of the government. You can't farm it out to NGOs just because they happen to be there, and or they offer their services. This need to be. That's why the act need to be looked at to bring it into line with the current needs of what we need it to be. Now, what led to the need to outsource these mental patients to NGOs? And there must be a clear separation of duties between the DSD and DHO, DOH, because there can be a temptation that the Department of Social Development can fund NGOs to deal with mental patients and without maybe the Department of Health taking an active part in this type of arrangement, or the Department of Health may encourage the Department of Social Development to siphon out the burden somewhere, relieve than by getting some of those things happening on the site. The estimating problem showed something of that nature, where somebody passed on from somewhere and it was found out that they were under the care of the Department of Social Development, not the Department of Health. Prevention is better than cure. Why did the oncologists leave in droves? Is it because they are going for greener pastures, or because after training them and reaching that level of competence, they feel you must pay them competent wages as well, or what? And is there a workable plan being taken to train registrars in all spheres of medicine in the province? Because there was a shortage of registrars a few years back, and that was going to lead to a disaster in 5 years' time if this is not done. Thank you.
My apologies, Chair. I think, Chair, my last question was, what is the working relationship of the department with the traditional leaders and traditional leaders and the traditional healers? Thank you very much. On issues of mental health.
Okay. Thank you very much, MSC. I want to follow in the view of what Honorable James raised in terms of, I would say it's your presentation is too much general. It does not provide us with the necessary understanding. Remember that presentations are not for the sake of presentations, but they also empower us so that when we go and conduct our oversight, we are then going to be able to find. And when we make some follow-ups, we are able to make those follow-ups being informed. Let me tell you why I'm saying general. We would have expected, and to be honest, we are the only province that has done this. All provinces have categorized everything. In terms of human resource, I'll make an example. This is the staffing levels. These are posts that are vacant because of this. And we don't find it here. The other area around the forensic area, your relationship with the correctional service, because it's our understanding that they are being sent to correctional service centers, and therefore, how then are you working the monitoring with yourselves and the correctional service? The other area that we think that you are very thin on it is the issue of child and adolescent psychiatrists. And yes, you did reflect that the issue of substance abuse, but is that all? And what is the most prevalent mental disorder? Maybe in a particular, even if you have taken one, let's say eThekwini, we have seen that a number of patients that are admitted in an X facility are those that are bipolar and the age. We are raising this because we do think that as much as what has transpired at SIDMEN, but what is it outside that, as Honorable Mahlalela have said, prevention is better than cure, but also do you go and your awareness programs, not only in the general community, starting from at schools, communities. So we would have appreciated that type of a presentation, which I think maybe some of the issues therefore that we are raising now, we will give you time. We are not expecting you to give us that information now because you would not have checked in your records. But we are going to make a follow-up because we really do want to have that understanding. Your recruitment strategy in terms of the existing staff that you have, professional nurses that you have, that you want, you do have a recruitment strategy of taking them to go and do advanced psychiatry so that they are then able. The number of social workers, what are the challenges? What is your program with the social with the Department of Social Development? We want to have that picture so that, and we know for a fact that issues, circumstances, and environment differ from one province to another, but even in the same province, from one district to another, because you have got districts that are more rural, you have got districts that are peri-urban, you have got districts that are urban, and obviously issues of mental health will differ from one to another. The last issue that we would also want to, which we have raised with other provinces, is that in all this, in your observations as the department, the impact of high rate of the impact of high rate of unemployment, how has it contributed? The high rate of unemployment, if I can rephrase, thank you. Because we will have to also understand that. So we will those areas that you are able to respond to is fine, but those that will need a detailed information, we will humbly request that you forward those to us. I think those are the areas. I think in the issue of oncology, I've been covered by honourable members in terms of the questions. Thank you very much. We'll hand over to you, MEC, for response. The last one, you didn't talk about your mental health review board. Do you have it? Is it functional? That's what one thing that was striking. Your report is very silent on whether you do have it or you don't. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson. One must apologise, and I've heard from the Chairperson that we are the last province to present. One would have expected that we already would be having a proper template of what other provinces have done, and would actually have followed suit. So we will check that at home, what actually happened in terms of the preparation. But on the slide that we have, the Honourable Chairperson, the establishment of mental health review boards. We have 11. Each district has got 11. Each district has got its own mental review board, and they are appointed by the MEC through sort of approval that come in at that level. Appointments, therefore, I sign. And the mental health review boards have a term of about five years, and therefore we have to get a new board. Some of the members might have to be re-elected. Why we have 11? Is because each and every, like we've indicated, each and every facility, even if it's Mahatma Gandhi, so there will be mental health patients per district, no matter how small that area. So because we are covering, so each and every district will have a mental health review board. We would rely on people who are experienced. Some of them are retired. It could be a retired psychiatrist. It could be a retired advanced psychiatric nurse. We would also have in that mental review board a person who's vested in law and another community leader. So that usually becomes the key components of the mental health review board. I would think there was one which Honorable James said also indicating that we do not have all the information. We've just received it now, but we are ready to have come in right at the start and make a presentation on it. On those following hospitals that are fully fledged specialized services, we have the following numbers. The Town Hill, we have 280 beds. At Fort Napier, we have 370 beds. Umgeni has 459 beds. King Dinizulu has 120. Ekuhlengeni has got 965 beds. Matateni has got 250 beds. Umzimkhulu is 130 beds. We are sorry for not providing that information as it should have been brought up there. So others that were asked by Honorable James, who Dr. Kanele might actually raise them well because she would probably remember those figures well. There was one question that was asked regarding, maybe just to finish, on the remedial, or maybe one should actually say we might have confused the members there. We were saying we looked at the issues that were raised from SDMN Ombuds report, and they were, among other things, making those mention. There's no diligence done. So we are just saying those that we have ticked is because that part is actually in existence, not that we also do not have issues. But you are correct. In the staffing norms, it's not good just saying, yes, we meet the staffing norms without indicating what staff and what are the levels of qualification and how many. So we are noting what the honorable members have mentioned and that we are short of issues that were raised in there. There was a question asked with regards to the licensing. The licensing is done in partnership by the DS, Department of Social Development and Health. We do a joint inspection and we satisfy ourselves because, like we are saying, within that facility, there is a social component of a patient. There is also a health component of a patient. So you don't leave it to social development alone. They don't leave it to ourselves alone because our competences then have to meet. So it's a joint partnership that issues licensing, and therefore we do that annually. I think I wanted just to move on those ones. On the rehabilitative, again, we are not showing well. There was a question right on, do we have, Honorable James, or outpatient for mental illness? Yes, there is. Most of those hospitals, like I indicated, that have got some beds, that have got some mental health services, King Edward, Prince Mshieni, Addington, all those that we listed there, have got acute psychiatric OPD. So within the outpatient there will be, and some of the patients who are already coming in for reviews will not necessarily have to go to Pietermaritzburg too. So they are discharged for medication to get it and monthly on those hospitals where they are residing close by. So that at Etewin, Addington, King Edward, Mahatma Gandhi, there will be mental health services that will cater for patients, firstly for acute admissions and maybe patients that are on chronic that needs to be followed up there. It happens in those areas. Maybe Dr. Kaile might come in to then add some of the issues are raised, but I want to just move to some of the issues. Honorable Maisela, I agree. We have mentioned that in our last slide again to say, yes, the review of the license to revising, updating our draft mental health review strategy and the strategy is necessary, but we are raising that because it is within our mandate, of course, led by the minister to look into those processes. So we're noticing the gaps, and we are actually saying those gaps need to be closed by looking into that. Dr. Kindly, you help me if there are ones outstanding. I wanted now to move to just closing the ones on oncology. Why are they leaving? Are they to do with the issues that we are training? So firstly, I wanted to say I don't know why we as a country, or we are strict to say if they fund me, which the government did, to train as a doctor for the 6 years that I've trained as an undergraduate, I'll have to pay back the 6 years through my service and work in a public hospital for 6 years. Thereafter, I can do something else. But it doesn't look like we're very strict on when you do a postgraduate. There are doctors who have trained as specialists. The next month they finish, this month they are gone to the private sector. It's very lucrative. You get hard cash right now. Now, that's one aspect. Now, there may be reasons for, one, I needed to train and go into private work. There also may be reasons that, look, the public hospitals are not really giving me the best of in terms of, I did train there, but they're not giving me the best in terms of equipment. We must not run away. We'll come back to the issues of equipment and how we're servicing that, and also, and therefore I need to go where I could get the best of equipment and work from there. Be that as it may not be probably correct for Inkosi Albert Luthuli, because that one has got a PPP model which allows a broken machine this hour fixed the next hour because of our PPP, and there are penalties coming into that, which is very different from other hospitals. So yes, I must actually accept that a delay in that Atingen Hospital, at King Edward Hospital, and in any other hospital in terms of servicing the equipment properly on time might lead to a frustration, and it has led to the frustration of that doctor and that doctor, and maybe continue to work under these frustrating conditions, or then decide to leave. But the sudden departure of the two doctors, I think it was Albert Luthuli, cannot be attributed to working conditions. Safe to say, maybe if the doctor will say, look, we are overworked, all the other patients who were supposed to be treated at King Edward are now coming to us, therefore overworked, because the hospital will continue and has been continuing working optimally with the best ever facilities and equipment. I must therefore immediately say, we are not very happy with the way we have delayed. Probably delay comes from this. If you are having a private hospital that will see 3 or 4 cancer patients per day going through this machine today, and you could block the machine tomorrow and service it, and therefore, so if you have our government hospital that will see 50 patients on this machine today, it will have to see another 50 tomorrow, another 50, because of the big capacity, the services are free. Now, if that machine breaks and probably need major repairs, you need to actually make sure what you do with the 50 patients that are coming tomorrow. If you don't have a plan, you are really found wanting. That is where we have not been very strong to make sure either we have an additional spare machine to come in and service while we are repairing this one, or get someone who is competently able to service this machine on time and get it on the system quickly, and just not delay. So we must admit that there has been a delay in some hospitals in terms of servicing the machine on time, get them ready to see patients, and that is one of the things that we really are working on. The minister has not been very happy with that service, and therefore it's one of the issues that we want to say. What type of people you have on the ground that services the machine, when they service it today and tomorrow again is broken, and they actually take long to service. Some of the machines, however, are machines that come from overseas, so the broken parts might take longer to wait for that. So that is why maybe the advice of the minister, look, if you are going to have broken parts, rather spend more money, buy other machines, expensive as they are, a 4 million CT scanner, to be there as a spare in the event you are servicing this one, it takes longer. So I think that part might actually be one of the areas that actually has impacted in terms of, look, you are having this slice of a budget, service, buy all that, service all your machines on time. So that one I don't want to hide, that there are certain areas, especially Addington, that has actually have been having its machines not properly well oiled on time. Therefore, the load of patients who were supposed to have been seen at Addington then moves over to Nkosi Albert Tutu, and therefore improving and increasing the load of patients there. That might lead to a poor morale and burnout of staff, and probably decide to leave even at that level. I don't know, John, you have other additionals in terms of mental health. What am I?
Thank you, MC. I think the only one, MC, was regarding the awareness programs that we run. Just to say, there are awareness programs that are run, the small ones that are run at facility levels, but there also are provincial awareness programs that are initiated from the provincial office. For example, we've had one where the theme was about depression, that was done together with the university. And one that was done also done at the beachfront on mental health care. I think you've answered everything.
I want to make a plea, MC. We will send you a template, but it would have been much easier if you would have phoned the secretariat to say we are expected to report. How can you advise what should then be the layout of our presentation? But what we will do, we will send up a. The only question that you didn't answer from my side, it's two on mental health, is recruitment and your working relationship or your program with the, how do you collaborate or how do you, with the correctional service? Because I think that is very, very important for us to, because we do know that you may have patients, in fact you do, who have patients that have been sent for observations, and we will then expect when we make a follow-up presentation, give us a detailed number in this, but for now, do you have that relationship with the correctional service department in terms of the forensic area in relation to patients that are being sent there by the Department of Justice? Thank you.
Yeah, in fact, my questions were not answered.
The one on the
one
I remember left unanswered from Honorable Ndaba was the working relationship with traditional leaders and healers, and in terms of mental health. I noticed that one we didn't answer. Maybe may I find out, ma'am, if there's another one, maybe you'll remind me in terms of that one. As a specific program, maybe let me say no, but we are just one province that is very strong on our mental, on our relationship with traditional leaders, let me put it that way. In terms of all the programs that make us to be able to do well on male medical circumcision, we can do this much, but we depend and rely on the traditional leaders to even call us and recruit and say, we have recruited here, we want to come and do health awareness in our programs and come and do male circumcision this side. And traditional healers, again, we have a very strong relationship. We rely, in fact, there's even a training that cuts across all our leaders, traditional healers, because we are under the impression and we are now observed that any person who gets a headache, whether this person thinks this is a bewitched or whatever, at night when all our offices are closed, the next available healthcare practitioner is a traditional healer. They go in there, and therefore we've worked very well with them, and right now there are programs and plans when our traditional healers work with them. They say, Here, Sister Kumede, here, Dr. Zuma, I've treated this patient in front of me for Rumeko, but I have now noticed that this person is also having the following. He's coughing more than a month. This person actually is losing weight and is having night sweats. And from our discussion we had with you 2 months ago, we suspect that this person has got TB. We are now referring to you. Take over. What we go around in the province saying and doing is to say to our healthcare workers in clinics and hospitals, please do write back to those traditional healers because they've done us a good service. To encourage them and motivate them that you were so correct, the person that you referred last week is now on treatment for TB, and therefore we commend you for doing that one. So, but ma'am, in terms of specific on mental health and our mental health services with them, maybe we have not explored that well, because generally speaking, all of us should not hide that we're not really, we are probably to some extent not doing what we should in terms of mental health. We should be doing more than what we are actually doing. On the issues raised by Chairperson, on the by law, we are expected and we do having to take care of state president's patients, those patients that are chronic. So there is a lot of presence of pharmacological services staff in most of these facilities that are permanently or that have taken of our chronic patients. Those are largely found in Townhill, Fort Napier, and Umngeni hospitals. So there are patients there who have been there for the past 20 years. They come in, those are patients who would have to be assessed, and if they are still found to be in conflict with the law, brought to our facilities. But arrested within a health facility, because they still have to be checked whether really it is mental that is improving or what. So that part, Honorable Chair, I agree, we left out, we didn't mention it is happening. But the other one of recruitment, I think we agree and accept and apologize that we were not very systematic. And I would just check at home why there was no request from our administrators, senior administrators, the proper template of how to populate it and bring it to this level.
In terms of labor on this, because it affects the area that we are, the subject that we are talking about, in terms of the advocacy groups that you are working with, but I will highlight, I'll just elevate traditional healers. You will understand, MC, that our people, they do believe in the Uba. I am bewitched and they will take me to a traditional healer. Now, are traditional healers in your province, do they understand or are they empowered as much as I do believe that I'm bewitched? But do they have that ability and capacity to persuade me that take your treatment that you are given at a hospital? I will treat you, but ensure that you take it, because what we have observed is that, and we observe in our constituencies, in our families, that when a patient goes to the worst area, I don't want to talk about it because that is the other area that is really making it difficult in this to treat patients, because patients believe that to pass out here, I must not take this treatment. And down the line, a patient relapses. But let's talk about our traditional healers. We will humbly request that as much as you are relating to other areas, but specifically to the area of mental health, because that is where we think that our communities, that's where there is a weakness, and therefore empowering traditional healers to really understand that they must persuade these patients that balancing these two treatments is then going to be very important, because they are a critical stakeholder, in particular around the issue of mental illness. We will await, therefore, I think we will ensure that the Secretariat, when we come back in August, we will await. In fact, you are going to fall under those that are to come back after 3 months to give us a detailed situation in terms of what is the outlook in terms of all the issues that we have raised. But thank you very much, and also the report that you have given us about the issue of the oncology. Maybe it's a challenge, that the broader challenge that we must look into as the governing party led by the African National Congress, that are we not to ensure that we have the capacity and ability to manufacture our own CT scans. What if we do that, if we try to do that, what will be the long-term benefits in terms of the budget itself? Because if we are to order outside the country, I'm raising this within the context of the radical economic transformation. So each sector has got contributions within this, because I agree with you, it's a challenge in the public hospitals, the issue of maintenance of these equipment, which they delay, and people that are empowered with this, they'll rather say, let me go to the private sector where work is going to be done, where I'm going to get, because we can't run away from it, where I'm going to get my remuneration and my on time, not going to be delayed by some of the things. But as the country, as the African National Congress, we will have to, when we go to our policy conference, look in some of these things without any fear or favor of being blackmailed. Because at the end of the day, we want to do good service. It's not that there is nothing good that has been done, that there is a good story, but that good story is being challenged by that this is one of the sectors that has got a legacy. We're not going to go back into that, but what is it that legacy must teach us in moving forward? And among other things, it is this thing, Oguchi, how then to ensure that we manufacture our own, if that is possible. But one thing that I think we must not, we were here when the minister was responding about the article of we must not succumb to broadcast blackmail. I think it's about time. We must not succumb, but we rely mainly on provinces, because that's where the sector is doing its work. We know that we've got the challenge of human resource. We are still going to come back to you on the issues of the challenges of human resource, on the issue of procurement, on the issue of financial management. But we always say to provinces, that's where work is being done. And as this portfolio committee, there are issues that we are a bit concerned about. But it's not that there is no work, that good work that is being done, province by province. I will tell you in the policy conference what was said in my province. I said, this is quite impressive, but it really needs that we are to come together. But thank you very much. We will come back. It then means when you come back after 3 months, you have to redo your report. That's the unfortunate part about it. But at least you have outlined the issues that we wanted. And sorry if we were not open and frank enough to say, I don't look at her. It was your responsibility to call her and say, Kasitshele Ntombi, what is the template that is expected? We always advise provinces to do that. This is, no, don't throw it back on us. It is also a responsibility when you get an invite to say, what is it that is expected of us to do? But thank you very much, and thank you for being patient. We will meet end of June in the policy conference, where we are to relook into all this. But thank you very much, and until we meet again, in the next 3 months in this policy in this portfolio committee. Our meeting stands adjourned until we meet again. Sorry for delaying you. Honorable
Chairperson, we want to sorry to speak after you, but we want to profusely apologize for this that has happened. It's the first time we come to the portfolio committee with this unpreparedness, and I was actually reliably informed that the presentation was according to what was requested. We apologize for this profusely.
Well, thank you very much. Honorable members, just for a second, as they leave, because I want to remember. Next week, we